From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Paul Boger. This is State of Nevada.
Did he pick something?
That's the sound from inside Clark County's Give Joy event earlier this month, where volunteers distributed toys, laptops, and gift cards to some of the Valley's 3,200 foster kids. On the same day, another Clark County event gave away 200 bikes, more than 600 toys, and free Christmas trees to families in need. Now, that's a lot of people helped, but they're just some of the folks receiving a bit of assistance from cities and counties around Nevada this holiday season. To sort through what other kinds of cheer local governments offer this holiday season, KNPR producer Ann Davis spoke to Wilson Ramos, North Las Vegas' Director of Community Services and Engagement, and Corey Clark, Henderson's Parks and Recreation Superintendent. Here's that conversation.
Wilson and Corey, welcome to State of Nevada.
Thank you for having us.
So, Corey, I want to begin with you. What are you hearing from the Henderson community this year as we've been, you know, leading up to the holidays? Has this been a challenging season for people?
No, I think your folks are feeling, you know, pressures of, you know, everything's costing more when you go to the store. And so we're seeing people turn more and more to parks and recreation for the affordability and the accessibility in our services. You know, we do meals for seniors at our senior centers. And we have a lot of family-friendly, fun activities that are affordable to start with. And for folks that need that extra hand, we're able to help with financial aid as well.
I definitely want to get into some of those programs that you and also North Las Vegas offer. But first, I want to ask Wilson, what's changed compared to last year? Are more North Las Vegans asking for help or maybe even just asking for different kinds of help this year than last?
Yeah, I would say a little bit of both. There's been an upturn and need, obviously, and a different climate out there as far as our corporate centers and our economics go. But in light of that, we have included and opened this year in May our Dolores Huerta Resource Center, which hosts a plethora of different services from arts and culture to education, GED, HISET, ESL classes. We've got an esports lab in there. We offer primary care. We've got a mobile unit that's there Monday through Saturday. We also offer free mental health, and all of these things have been free workforce development, certification courses, placement, et cetera, and then community workshops, you know, all of which to benefit and help the community in this state of need now.
Now, Wilson, how has that new center served the surrounding neighborhood this season? Are there any holiday specific programs for people in need?
There have been, yes. So we've hosted our turkey drive, which had roughly about 575 turkeys distributed. We've also had our Christmas toy drive, which services and gives up to almost 3,500 toys to children locally. And the Resource Center obviously is for the full valley. There is not just an inclusionary component that requires for them to be just North Las Vegas residents. These are residents from all over our valley. We've seen over 7,000 people in that center since opening.
What is the group that is being hit the hardest right now this holiday season, who needs sort of the most help and care?
To speak transparently, it's been our seniors and our kiddos. There are roughly 55,000 disconnected youth in our valley, in addition to a lot of needs amongst our seniors. Social Security checks, some of their retirements are just not cutting it in the market shifts. So there's been quite a bit of need amongst those two classes.
Now, Corey, are you seeing the same trends in Henderson, seniors and children?
Yeah, I would echo that as well. Definitely seeing that between those two demographics. And, you know, it's evidenced we do a congregate meal program at our Heritage Park senior facility where folks are able to come down donation only and have a thoughtfully prepared hot meal lunch. And we're just seeing those numbers. I think we're up 30% same month year over year last year. And that's just definitely a strong indicator that folks are feeling that pressure at home. And so they're looking for those affordable alternatives to have a hand.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. Now, Washoe County wasn't able to join us today, but a spokesperson did provide KNPR with a list of community events the county offered this month, including two special holiday meals at the 9th Street Senior Center on the 19th, so about 4 days ago. Corey, Henderson, like you mentioned, hosted something similar on December 18th, like you mentioned, at the Heritage Park Senior Facility. With inflation and food prices on everyone's mind right now, are food distribution events something Henderson is prioritizing this time of year?
Absolutely. It's definitely a priority for us. We know that that's particularly an area where folks are feeling those cost pressures when they go to the grocery store. And so while we're feeling the same pressure, it's been a priority for us to keep that program sustainable so that we're not turning anybody away. Our holiday meal on the 18th, we had folks lined up early in the morning at the door into the parking lot. And so we just know how much people look forward to that and need those outlets and opportunities.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wilson, I want to ask the same question to you. How is North Las Vegas tackling food insecurity this holiday season?
You know what? We grab it by the horns. During the federal shutdown, we partnered up with Three Squares Food Bank. For the month of November, out of our Silver May Center, our Neighborhood Rec Center, our Veterans and Community Resource Center, and our Dolores Huerta Resource Center, we distributed upwards of every day of the week and served roughly about 12,000 unique individuals just during the month of November. And we were just running those food lines. And folks, as Corey had mentioned, were lining up upwards of 2 to 3 hours prior to us opening it, so much so that we needed to open up our doors earlier because those cars were backed up into the streets. So there are certainly tons of need out there during this season.
Yeah, clearly a lot of need, like you said. Corey, we talked about the senior center meals, the meals for older people. What about kids going hungry this time of year, or single people or families? Do you have any programs in Henderson for them?
You know, we have the Three Square Food Program as well at City Henderson sites. They get involved with our camp programs, and we have local food sites. And so there are those outlets here in the City of Henderson as well. And, you know, for any of these things, you know, to go to cityhenderson.com for specifics on location, dates, and times. But we're happy to have Three Square as an integral partner and serving our youths and our community as well.
Yeah, and I do want to mention for listeners that we will have links to the Henderson page and the North Las Vegas page at our website at knpr.org. And now I know toys are also obviously a really big part of the Christmas holiday for a lot of families. Throughout December, Washoe County provides foster parents with $250 per child to spend on designated shopping days. And down in North Las Vegas, Wilson, you held your fourth annual community toy drive on December 20th. What do events like these, you know, toy events happening across the state, mean for kids and their families this time of year?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, just playing the part of Santa as we distribute over 3,000 toys is eye-opening for me in that experience, because these young kids may not have anything this year. And some of the kids, from some of their wishes as they were sitting on Santa's lap, they were asking for, you know, food and just basic necessities. And one young kiddo asked if his brother could get his sight back. It's just been an unbelievable turnout with a lot of need, but very humbling. And these kids definitely had their fair share. We've had 25 bikes, just over 75 gift cards, and again, over 3,000 toys that were distributed.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of toys. How many kids do you usually serve at North Las Vegas's toy giveaway like this?
You know, last year we served 4,200. This year we, again, have just over 3,000 toys to distribute. So there's been quite a bit of service that's been offered for toy drives, and we plan on keeping this going for some time, since there is such a large turnout. And these kiddos and their families line up 2 hours prior to 8 a.m. So they're bright and early, 6 a.m., ready to see Santa and get some of these toys.
Absolutely. Now, Corey, tell me a little bit about Henderson's toy drive this year. I understand it was a partnership with a private company.
Yeah, we were able to partner with National Championship Sports earlier this month, where they did an adult softball tournament at Aurora Grande Sports Complex, where they generated 1,000 toys and a bunch of money to go to some Target gift cards. And so it's a fun collaboration between us and NCS and the Boys and Girls Club. So the Boys and Girls Club helps with the community distribution of the 1,000 toys, and 290 kids are going to get in City of Henderson Parks and Recreation programs are going to get Target gift cards as a result of this collaboration.
I want to move to a personal story from a community member named Soon Lewis. She's a foster parent who attended the county's Give Joy event a few weeks ago. Here's a clip from her.
My children feel that they're forgotten in this whole situation. And so for them to come here and receive the love and support from others, it's just a blessing to us.
So I've spoken to quite a few foster parents over the years, and the emotional impacts that Soon talks about are always a concern year round. For kids and even adults of all backgrounds, how does the desire to be inclusive, like what Soon was talking about, factor into what holiday events you choose to offer to the community each year?
We have a minority majority here in North Las Vegas, and so we have to diversify the activities and the things that we do. We had a parade this year. We've had mariachis that's been involved, again, making sure that they have attainability to those resources, but also adding a fun component to it through our esports lab. So doing tournaments out of that lab. I mean, you name it, we've got it. And it's always a fun but diverse incorporation for us to do things that are more applicable to the community that we serve.
Wilson Ramos is Director of Community Services and Engagement for the City of North Las Vegas, and Corey Clark is the Parks and Recreation Superintendent for the City of Henderson. Wilson and Corey, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Anne. It was a pleasure. And Corey, thank you, my friend. It was really good talking with you today.
Absolutely, Wilson. That was a lot of fun. And Anne, thank you for having us both on. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. And we'll have a link to Nevada facilities as well as some of the websites and programs listed here that will be open tonight and on Christmas Day at knpr.org.
Christmas is tomorrow, and for many of us, it's the culmination of the holiday season. All the running around, decorating, shopping, traveling, baking, wrapping presents, all of it comes down to that one day where families come together and celebrate. And of course, not everybody's holiday season looks the same. For starters, not everyone celebrates Christmas. And the folks who do, well, family traditions can run the gamut. To learn a little more about how families around the Las Vegas Valley like to celebrate, I visited the Holiday to Remember event at Cashman Park earlier this month. Here are just a few of the folks I spoke with.
You know, what is something that you personally look forward to?
Decorating cookies and gingerbread houses with
really?
Them. Yeah, I start doing that with them every year. It's just something fun, keeps them entertained.
Really, it's mostly about everybody coming together and engorging ourselves with Christmas holiday food. The first thing I always go for is the holiday ham and the deviled eggs.
So we celebrate on the 24th instead of the 25th. The 25th is just like relaxing. The 24th is about actually opening the presents and like eating and all that stuff.
That was Kayla Robinson, Jonathan Buckley, and Araceli Rodriguez speaking to me earlier this month. Nearly everyone I spoke with said the same thing. It's an opportunity to spend time with people they love and to pass down traditions. So what are some of those traditions? I recently spoke with KNPR's Jimmy Romo, Vita Lin from the Asian Community Development Council, and Raminya Ingram with the Ujima Community Center about some of their favorite ways to spend the holiday season. First, a little background on you, Jimmy. You're Latino. Your wife is originally from Mexico City. So your Christmas is very rooted in Latin American traditions. You know, we've talked a little bit about this in the newsroom, but in what ways do you think the holiday season is different in Latin American homes versus the more Eurocentric Christmas portrayed in like Coca-Cola ads?
I mean, besides the food and just the day we celebrate, we typically celebrate on the 24th, the eve. So we all get together, have dinner, we'll bring all of our gifts, and typically we have some tamales, sometimes we have a pozole, and maybe some champurrado, and we just get ready to all enjoy the festivities, because I'm still learning today what most Americans do for Christmas, because it's still different, even today.
You know, what do you think you first realized that Christmas for you and your family looked different than maybe the typical one represented on TV?
Since elementary school and maybe even daycare, my friends would ask me like, oh, what are you doing for Christmas Day? I'm like, I didn't know you did something for Christmas Day. We just celebrate on the eve and that was it. So from that point, I knew we had such differences and just the food also. I mean, I didn't know. I just found out a lot of Thanksgiving typical food. So Christmas is also pretty different.
What do you think is so? I mean, talk to me. What is so different?
I mean, so we have tamales, and that's essentially, I mean, it dates back so far, far back. I mean, we typically start making the tamales right after the day of Our Lady Guadalupe, and we start that on the 12th of December. So that's when we start cooking the tamales, and we go all the way through until January 6th, essentially. So we have those foods, and we also have these, what would essentially be like these batter and flour in a shape, almost like a star flake, or a snowflake, I should say. And then you dip it in oil in the backyard. Usually someone's uncle is in the backyard, just, you know, dipping and putting it in the oil. And then once you get a huge batch, and then you just sprinkle some sugar on it, and they are delicious. So that's what we're typically seeing, a either green or red tamal. We have some red rice, some pozole if my grandma's in town, and we just have a feast on the Christmas Eve.
Technically, there are 12 days of Christmas. Christmas Day is just the beginning, and it technically stretches all the way to January 6th, where it culminates in Epiphany or Three Kings Day. You know, besides eating, which I think we're all doing during this time frame, you know, what else are you and your family doing?
On the 12th, like I mentioned before, it's a big cultural religious time, right? The Virgen de Guadalupe is very, very, very famous in Mexico. It's essentially when Mexico, that was very mestizo, it was Mesoamerica, that's when Juan Diego, you know, showed his cloth. He demonstrated that that's Our Lady Guadalupe, and that's where you had so many baptisms happen. That's where Mexico at that time took over the Spanish. So now we still kind of cherish that in just cultural aspects. It's not so much sometimes religious per se, but it's just a tradition. We at that time we start making the tamales. We take out that beat up pot to make tamales. And then after that, we're still going those 12 days of Christmas up until January 6th.
So talking about those tamales, is that your favorite, or what is your favorite dish this time of year?
I mean, look, if my grandma asked me what she should make, she should make a menudo. But a lot of people like pozole, and I also love a tamal. So I love a red tamal with red sauce and some beef and potato in it. And I also like a big Sprite on the side, or a Sprite, depending on who you're asking. But yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I love the food. I'm always excited to eat. I'm cooking some tamales for my families. My mother-in-law is coming over to my mom's. My mom is still learning how to cook, as my grandma would say, but we are still enjoying and eating as much as possible.
Jimmy Romo, thank you.
Thank you.
Also with us to talk about the holidays is Vita Lin. She's the president and founder of the Asian Community Development Council. Vita, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what does the holiday season look like for you and your family?
For me and my family, I was born in the U.S. My parents are from China. And for us, we didn't really celebrate Christmas or holiday because we had a business, a restaurant, and we opened for business and make sure we feed people, right? So for me, Christmas was a little different than most family maybe in America. But it was really when I got older that we actually get to celebrate a little bit more, right? To me, Christmas was, we open a Christmas gift after Christmas Day. So you have all, because we're always working or we're busy, right? But I do remember as we got older and we understood how the American culture celebrate Christmas, we began to have things like roast beef or prime rib or things like that. That was really something that I look forward to, right? But we also mix up with like rice and Asian food too. So we get a combination of, as we do in Asia, a lot of different dishes and different choices. Being that our family opened a restaurant, we had food to eat. So that's one thing comfortable about is eating was a thing, but it was different for our family.
Of course, not everybody celebrates Christmas. There are several non-Christian faiths representing the broader Asian American community. On that theme, what other holiday traditions are going on for those who aren't looking at this time of year as the cultural or religious hub of the year?
I believe that everybody enjoys the holiday and everybody enjoys, you know, Christmas, no matter if they believe in or understand the whole story about it, but it adapt to the idea of bringing together and celebrate. But we do have other things. Like for the Chinese culture, we have the Lunar New Year, which is to celebrate according to lunar moon. So each year or date is different. The, in 2026, it will be February 17th. And that's a big celebration when they go all out with not only food, but we give out like red envelope for the kids for lucky money. We have, we give out, we get together and celebrate. And the night before the Lunar New Year, we do family tradition of, you know, playing and gambling, playing mahjong, or, you know, having food and just enjoying kids, just having a good time. But the food is very elaborate, and certain food that we serve represent, like the long noodles, meaning long life. We have the ningo, which is like a rice cake that we use to serve, you know, that every year you get older because the translation sounds like, you know, every year you grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have the sponge cake, which is called fako, which means that you have money coming in. So a lot of the food we serve that day would be very traditional to celebrate the new year. And things that we don't do, we don't clean house the day of. We do everything beforehand, get rid of all the last year's, you know, trash and so forth. So that's one tradition. The Lunar New Year is also celebrated by the Vietnamese community and the Korean community with their different food and their different tradition. So growing up in the U.S. and meeting with, you know, what I do with the Asian Community Development Council, I get to meet other cultures and other group and what they do, and I really have a good time, and we try to make sure that we embrace them and celebrate with them.
Fidelin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also with us to talk about the holidays is Herminia Ingram with Ujima Community Services, a group dedicated to educating and helping the community take part in the cultural celebration known as Kwanzaa. Herminia, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here. This is exciting.
So briefly, can you tell me a little bit about Kwanzaa and when did you first start celebrating?
So Kwanzaa is a time of the year that is non-religious. It is Pan-African in nature. It was created in 1966 by Dr. Milana Karanga. And this cultural holiday is rooted in the African harvest festivals, and it's designed to help African Americans reconnect with their African heritage and values. So it's celebrated from December 26th to January 1st, with each day focused on one of the Nguzu Saba, is the seven principles. So I started really celebrating when I was in college. So I went to Tennessee State University, and it's very cultural. Kwanzaa was a big thing in Nashville, Tennessee, in the African American community. But my family didn't participate in Kwanzaa because they really didn't know, right? Because Kwanzaa was started in California and then it moved across the country. But my family was deeply religious, so we still fell into that bucket of Christianity where we're celebrating Christmas and New Year's Eve as traditionalists. So
what do you and your family do to celebrate or honor the observance in particular? Is there anything special?
Yes, there is. So we have a Kwanzaa table set up all year round in our home. We started it 2 years ago where we was, let's not take it down. Let's just, you know, dust it off, make sure we put new books on it. My son's 10, so we put the Nguzu Saba one right next to the table on a wall. And we light the candles only during Kwanzaa. So when on December 26th, which is a Friday, we're gonna light the candle. Now that we're in Las Vegas, there's a few events going on throughout the year, right? So on Friday, we'll be at the West Las Vegas Cultural Center, which is located on Lake Mead. They're gonna open up. There's dance classes going on there. Then on Saturday, there is something that we do every year. And it's a big thing in the community, right? It's standing room only. It's going to be at the West Las Vegas Cultural Center Theater, which is the old West Las Vegas Library. And it's always standing room only, but we're going to do the rites of passage. So for about 12 to 14 weeks, there's a group of boys and a group of girls that go through a series of workshops and lessons and bonding. We have the Whitney Library will be having their event, I think, and on Tuesday we'll be at the new West Las Vegas Library, where Ujima Community Services will be hosting its annual Family Game Day, where we'll be coming together for NIA purpose on Tuesday from 3 to 8. And we do board games. So we have books, board games, we give away board games and books. We light the candles, we talk about every day, we get the children involved. And it's a way for people who don't celebrate the holiday to come together in a non-stressful way, and they can learn. And then on the 31st and the 1st, we're going to be at home. So we're going to invite some of our close friends and family over on the 31st. And then we have caramels. So we'll be going over to a friend's house where they're going to be hosting the caramel on the first day. And so the caramel is this big feast that happens at the end of Kwanzaa. And it's similar to how, you know, you have the holidays and you go to your family's house. That's what we do on the last day. It's a big feast where everybody's cooking, music, books, stories, history. How are we connecting to our heritage? So it's a remedy for isolation through collective work and shared purpose. So that's what we'll be doing this year.
You know, you mentioned some of these broader events. That's part of an effort that you work with called the Kwanzaa Collective. That is a way to help the community learn more about Kwanzaa and participate in the celebration. How important is that effort to helping the broader community understand and appreciate a celebration like Kwanzaa?
I came to Las Vegas in 2019. And I couldn't find anything. This year, because I've seen it happen when I was in college in Nashville, Tennessee, where they had a Kwanzaa collective. And at the beginning of the year, you would find out who was going to be doing Kwanzaa and where, what time. And then we would put it all in one calendar and then promote that calendar and do one big flyer and website. And this is where you find everything. So the Kwanzaa Collective, I was like, I need that here in Las Vegas, because I was still looking for, like, what's really going on? Where can I go and where can other people go? So this year at Ujima Community Services, we decided to put together a Kwanzaa Collective. And so the Kwanzaa Collective organizes the events that will make Kwanzaa participatory, right? So it's not educational. There's a lot of fun that goes along with the education. And it's important to the community because you're going to do the candle lighting at each one, the ceremony, the youth-led performances, and it's allowing everyone to feel invited and included into the culture. And so they're able to observe it and able to be a part of it without feeling like I don't know anything about it. So it's a good introduction. I would like to say that it's not mainstream. Definitely. It's not religious. So you can be any religion. You can be Jewish. You can be Christian. You can be Muslim. You can be an African traditionalist. You can be anything and practice Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is practiced all over the world, by African Americans, by Africans in the diaspora, by Africans, period. So, and more people are leaning into it in response to the commercial overload, because it's centered, it's healing, and it gives us something to build around.
Herminia Ingram is with the Ujima Community Services. Herminia, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. We'll be right back.
It's the holidays, and that's typically when Las Vegans want nothing to do with the Strip. But we're curious, for those who choose Las Vegas for the holidays, what do they like to do? And what is on offer between Christmas Eve and New Year's Day? Now, we've all seen the holiday casino decor, and we know the Strip clears the traffic on New Year's Eve, especially for the big fireworks display. But there are also special programming considerations made for the holidays, especially on the concert calendar. Dialed into the city's holiday happenings is John Katsalamidis, entertainment columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He spoke with KNPR senior producer Mike Pravat.
John, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, sir.
Hey, thanks for being here. John, you have covered entertainment in Las Vegas for a very long time now. For those of us who get out of Dodge during those last weeks of December, what is the Strip in downtown like between, say, Christmas Eve and New Year's weekend?
I think the best way to describe it is there's a lot of residual holiday activity. You know, there are a lot of shows and a lot of events that stray not only on the Strip, but around town that are built to go through the end of the year. You know, we've got a couple of shows like, for example, the Leona Lewis show over at Voltaire at the Venetian, which opened, by the way, the Christmas show opened the night before Halloween. So this one has had a long run, long runway, everything. That will be going on until the 3rd. We have, Enchant out at the ballpark runs past the holiday. We have the Glittering Lights out at the Speedway runs past the holiday. Athlem runs past the holiday out at the Chocolate Factory. Their cactus display, Fremont Street Experience. You know, as always, is going to be open and available. And, you know, they're going to have live bands throughout, and their Christmas tree lighting, which is ongoing, will run through the end of the year and through New Year's. I think the Christmas season in Las Vegas counts New Year's weekend in a lot of areas. And that's what I can tell you that from experience.
I want to ask you about adjustments that particularly the Strip might make for this holiday season. I'm thinking Cirque du Soleil, Spiegel World, all the tribute and magic shows, maybe comedy shows. What do the production shows do differently in that time?
They usually run discounts, and at times we'll hold off on shows. You'd have to go through and pick each production. But this is a good time of year between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve to find, if you want to see a show that you haven't, you know, wanted to afford, a Cirque show, Spiegel World show, you know, check Absinthe. They will be running discounts during that time period, just because we have a lull before the huge New Year's Eve weekend, which is a 3-day, you know, event that draws hundreds of thousands. But there is a little bit of a lull. The lull runs, I would say, past the closing of the National Finals Rodeo up until, you know, about the 30th.
Do any of the shows or the venues in town specifically do a entertainment program that is holiday themed?
Well, one I would recommend highly is the Tournament of Kings.
Ooh.
At Excalibur, right?
I've done that in a while.
Yeah, and I went to that recently, and they do a full scale holiday production specific to the Christmas season that is their regular, you know, format of the Knights of the Round Table and the whole thing, the Cornish hen, eat with your fingers, you know, we have pyro, we have lights, we have horses, we have a cast of 30-something performers, and it's really great. It's great for families. That has a Christmas theme, and that runs up through into the New Year's season. And I will tell you, too, that runs past Christmas, but is Christmas centered, is George Balanchine's The Nutcracker that Reynolds Hall at Nevada Ballet Theater is putting on. If you want to see our ballet presented in its best possible context, that's the show. And it's, of course, is the holiday theme. So those are the ones that leap, you know, to mind that I would recommend, at least.
I want to talk about the Fremont Street Experience.
Okay.
Lively scene any day of the year, I think one could argue. New Year's Eve, though, is a completely different animal. It is ticketed that night.
Yeah.
But it's $60, sounds kind of reasonable. You've got three stages.
Yep.
Instead of your typical tribute acts, you have a lot of headliners that are playing, a lot of different pop genres represented. CeeLo Green, Chingy, Common Kings, Robin Thicke, etc. Mm-hmm. What is that experience like?
Well, it's been a minute since I've been on Fremont Street for New Year's Eve, but I'll tell you, the last time I was on Fremont Street experience for New Year's Eve, I was tailing Oscar Goodman in one of his last New Year's Eves, and I went with him and Carolyn at the time. We went all around and came back and counted it down. But they have had headliners out there before. You know, I remember seeing Bachman Turner Overdrive out there. I think, God, I want to say Starship has been out there, you know, those types of acts. But I mean, that was when it was free, so they have incrementally increased the cost. That's, to me, I would say that Fremont Street Experience is the closest thing we'll have to a Times Square type scene. I mean, it's not free, but it's value. And if you want to hang out and party and see CeeLo, you know, this is the area that you will see him. You'll have a whole party and otherwise, but that will be in the middle. So it's not like going to a concert for a specific act, but it's folded into a night-long event. It's a big deal, just Fremont Street.
No kidding. I suspect that Sphere will be hopping. For starters, its high-tech treatment of Wizard of Oz, I believe a couple weeks ago, was nearing $200 million in gross. So I don't think that's slowing down anytime soon.
No.
The Backstreet Boys are supposed to be here between the 26th and January 3rd. Is that the place to be on the Strip this season?
You know, as we say, Sphere is just off the Strip, but we consider it on the Strip.
Sure.
I say get to the Sphere, whether it's New Year's Eve or Tuesday Eve or any other Eve, if you can. As far as Wizard of Oz, it's running as the theatrical experience through a year from now, through December of next year. So that sidelines, at the moment, their scheduling strategies, a sideline Postcard from Earth, sideline the U2 movie, and make Wizard the thing. They've drawn at least 1.5 million fans. They've made at least $200 million in gross on a movie that cost, according to James Dolan, $100 million to make, which is in kind of the blockbuster range. So that's a hit to me. And Backstreet Boys exceeded everybody's expectations, including Dolan's, about what their demand has been. And I think there's going to be a lot more shows from Backstreet Boys in the second half of 2026. I interviewed Nick Carter not too long ago and asked him about it. And I think they are in the category that the Eagles found themselves in, where you can extend as much as you want. I think you'll see more of them later next year, not just their scheduled dates in February.
I want to continue with concerts. A lot of the resident performers make sure to schedule shows for this time of year. You've got other headliners that are flying in to play single dates or double dates. Who do we got on tap?
Well, I will tell you right now, we're going to have Janet Jackson is coming into the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace, which has been kind of having a moment right now.
You know, for anyone that does want to see a New Year's Eve show on the Strip, which I have done, it can be fun, at least once you're in the venue. Do those shows run more expensively? Do we see surge pricing for the New Year's weekend?
I think each year is different, but I've seen it both ways. There have been years when they've had some of these big, big shows on seat fillers because people are doing so many other things.
Wow.
You know, they don't want to be in a venue. So I will give you an example. A few years ago, right before his run at Park MGM, Bruno Mars seats were on house seats at T-Mobile Arena. You know, it's a huge show, you know, but when he came into the Park MGM, he sold out everything and it was a different story. So I would check, the bigger the venue, the more likely you're going to get a deal, especially closer to runtime, you know. But going to a show on New Year's Eve is a very mixed bag because the performers typically don't like to be on stage counting down because it gets messed up. You know, they don't prefer that. The resort and the venue likes it. I saw the Killers do this at Chelsea at the Cosmopolitan a few years ago where they just misfired by, you know, several seconds, maybe a half minute, the count. But it didn't matter. We're on their time. Brian Newman had to count it down twice when he had Lady Gaga in the room in 2019. So, you know, I don't think you're going to get a great necessarily New Year's Eve turnover experience, but it'll be a singularly, memorable evening regardless.
You mentioned Bruno Mars. He's at Dolby Theater now. I feel like he's done that multiple times. That's essentially a strip New Year's Eve tradition at this point.
Yeah, he's been booked there every year, and he's done offshoot shows too. When Mayfair opened, him and Anderson .Paak came into that venue on New Year's Eve. That and I think they counted down there last year. and I think this year, Bruno will end up at the Pinky Ring at Bellagio and count down from there. That I would anticipate, because that's what happened last year.
Now, if a show happens to end before midnight and the venue's pushing everybody out, it's 11 o'clock at night and people are like, well, what now? I don't want to be on the strip necessarily, but we're here. We want to do something. Aside from maybe nightclubs, what are their options?
Well, it depends on where you're located, you know. That's the thing. If you're on the strip, you're going to be off to the the next casino or Link Promenade. You know, you can take a shot at a place like the Composer's Room and just get off the strip completely on East, you know, Sahara and go to their event, their countdown. But I think you're just left to, like on Fremont Street, they would prefer people to be outside the casino and in the general areas and doing and you know, patronizing the kiosk type bars that they have set up there, which is kind of the scene anyway. But I don't know. I've been through that where you're like, where am I going to go? You know, and it's a free-for-all.
I remember about 15 years ago, the nightclubs were the place to go, especially, you know, this was during the EDM era. High cover prices, super high table minimums for those who were getting tables.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then, we have repeatedly been told that a lot of the clubber crowd has graduated to the ultra lounges or just general lounges because maybe they wanted something a little more relaxed, a little less harried. Do you think that will play out over the holidays, or do maybe the nightclubs give you a reason to come back?
You know, that's a good question. They haven't made a big, at least with me, they haven't made a big push about their New Year's Eve-centric programming as compared to the rest of the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, I think fans will find themselves, you know, there are other places where you can go and be in a club-ish area, still enjoy the night, not feel like you're overwhelmed. If you're on the strip, you know, places like Caspian's at Caesar's Palace, Barbershop at the Cosmopolitan are music clubs that have live music that will count in and you don't feel like you're completely overwhelmed. You know, I think that those types of places are becoming more and more popular. I think that nightclubs will always have, you know, a spot in this and their headliners will run New Year's Eve and New Year's Eve weekend. But they're built to last over the entire year. You know, when you're signing Calvin Harris, you're signing him for multiple weekends across the landscape, not just for one night these days.
Now, let's be honest here. Most of us listening will not be braving the neighboring streets, much less the strip, on New Year's Eve. You mentioned places like the Composer's Room. I'm wondering what is on tap for locals in what I would call the locals-friendly areas and venues for the big night.
I would go to your locals' casinos that are popular generally. Durango, you know, those types of places on Boulder Highway that will be doing, you know, like the Sam's Towns and Boulder Stations are going to have, you know, activation that is going to be, you know, not overwhelming. You know, I will just say that I don't think the strategy is going to be that off of what you would want to do on any other weekend. You know, if you don't like going to the strip during a regular weekend or weeknight, then, you know, what do you do with your time? That I would apply that logic to New Year's Eve.
Don't overthink it is basically
right.
What you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's plenty to do. Plenty to do on New Year's Eve in Las Vegas for all price points. There's plenty to do in Las Vegas tonight, tomorrow night, any night. And just, you know, take some air out of the balloon and look at it. And
well, all that said, where will you be when the clock strikes 12?
I will be, okay, I've got a two-pronged plan, my friend.
Oh, boy.
On December 30th, I will be at Janet Jackson's opener at the Coliseum. Where I've seen her do New Year's Eve, a special New Year's Eve performance in about, I think it was 2015, I think, 14. And the next night, on the 31st, I will be at Mayfair Supper Club for their new show that they're debuting that night. They're going to bring in the team that Out of the Box is the production company that did Usher's residencies at the Coliseum and at Dolby Live and the adjacent shows that they did at both resorts. the sideline shows at On the Record and below the Coliseum that Usher did. This is going to be something really cool, and we're lifting the lid that night. There's also an opportunity, if I weren't doing that, and if this were to fall out, Ivan Caine's 40 Deuce is reopening at Mandalay Bay. It's a very slick and very stylish and popular burlesque club with live music that Ivan is bringing back, having closed it about 12 years ago at that very location. So that's opening also on New Year's Eve. Two places that are going to be places to watch in 26 are both opening on New Year's Eve.
That is the tireless John Katzlimidis, entertainment columnist for the Las Vegas Review Journal. John, thanks as always.
Says who, my friend? It's always good to be with you and have a good New Year.
You as well. Okay?